This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ed Dwight on the hotline right now. And I asked him how he's doing this morning. He said, pretty good. I forgot I agreed to do this so early, but I'm pretty good.
We just spoke with Ed in October. And it was great because he's Kansas City, you know, native. And his history and his life. We were talking about the space race, the documentary. But now there's a whole new and even better reason to have it on.
Born September 9th in Kansas City, Kansas, our next guest is a graduate of Bishop Ward High School, Kansas City Junior College, and Arizona State University. He enlisted in the Air Force, eventually becoming a test pilot, which helped lead to becoming the first African-American selected for the Aerospace Research Pilot School with the hopes of being sent to the NASA Astronaut Corps. But his dream of becoming an astronaut was cut short, the story of which he told in the documentary, The Space Race. But this past May 19th. That all changed as he became the oldest person to ever fly in space aboard Blue Origin's New Shepard. Please welcome sculptor, author, former test pilot, and astronaut, KCK's own Ed Dwight.
Ed Dwight.
Yo. Good morning.
Astronaut Ed Dwight. How are you, Ed?
Yeah, well, I'm okay. I'm good. Yes.
Other than them making you get up early to talk to ding dongs like us.
Well, I normally get up early anyway, but it's a lazy early, right. If you can follow that. You know, I'm a morning TV nut, and I grab the news before it gets to anybody else.
So we spoke in October, and you didn't mention, did you know in October that you were in line for Blue Origin?
Oh, I've been on that for a long time. People think that this is something that I get this magic phone call, there are a group of the black astronauts, and Charlie Bolden is a really strong supporter of mine. And he was the head of NASA, and so I was hooked into NASA this whole time since I got out. Actually, they've named an asteroid after me. They've flown my sculptures in space. So this has been a fascinating and supportive thing all along. And when the black astronauts normally go up, they all end up in my studio. They make this trek to Denver after they
That's
come
great.
Down, and we take pictures, and they bring me things that they've taken into space. So. This has been on the minds of especially the Black Astronaut Corps for quite a while.
Had you given up on the idea that it would happen though? I mean, at a certain point, I feel like you go, maybe it's not going to happen for me.
Well, it's ironically, it hasn't been on my mind because I'm talking about over these 60 years, there's nothing that I've really thought a lot about because I'm a really, really busy guy.
Right.
And I'm busy doing things and running businesses, making sculpture memorials around the country. And it hasn't been high on my priority list. And about a year or so ago, some buzz started talking, and then it was about, what platform, because I had people that were with the Branson Group and the various society other platforms.
Yes.
And it was just talk at the time. And you know, and Leland Melvin, the astronaut, that was the ex-NFL football player. You know, he made a crusade out of it actually, and started the conversation and started talking about it, and the other guys joined in, and that's how it ended up happening.
Well,
so,
I'll tell you, Ed. Let me go backwards.
It was just a matter of time. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me go backwards for a second because I have so many questions for you. Because as a kid, I grew up in Kansas City, of course. And I'm a huge fan of the history of space. I've traveled all the way to Moscow to the Space Museum to see their Space Museum. And and following this story with you, the idea, though, that you left after Kennedy was killed and your time in Air Force, it would have been so easy to become bitter because what kept you out was politics. It was pure politics and racism. And that's just irrefutable truth. You could have been bitter. Right. You could have spent the rest of your life being angry that you were denied this incredible gift and something you had clearly earned already. But you didn't. And that's the secret to happiness, isn't it? You can't live in the past. Yeah. And maybe that's what leads you back to your happiness again, to complete that circle, because you didn't spend the time being bitter.
I that's the best assessment that I've heard. And it's all true, but you know, I had to realize why I was there in the first place, and I knew that thing had a 50% chance of not succeeding, but when it was explained to me what my role had to be in the system, I had to adopt that hell. Think of if I didn't get appointed, and if I didn't do things, and if I didn't make 1,500 to 2,000 speeches running around the country back in the 60s, and I put this conversation on the minds of America by joining this the project. So I knew what my role was, and I was hoping like hell that I could get up there, because it would have done an incredible amount at the time. But
weird.
I was told all through this whole thing, from either my supporters, when the president had me going to the Senate, every weekend I would leave Thursday and I'd fly to Washington and meet senators. And I met 90 of the senators directly, shaking my hand, patting me on the back because the president wanted to get congressional support for the idea. And I had all this. There was so much wrapped up into it, and there was the tax base for NASA. NASA was still fledgling, and they could have gone down the toilet had they got into a big fight with the black community with Dr. King.
And that's what we talked about. It all depended on public funding, and they had to, that was so important to NASA at the time, was the imagery, right? I'll tell you, man, and the fact that. And again, I'm worried that we don't have enough time, so excuse me if I interject, Ed, because I have so many questions for you and so many things I want to say. You got there. So at 90 years of age, you strapped in, you sat on the pad, you looked straight up, and you did one of the things that so few people have done, and it is still, to me, incredibly dangerous, and you have to be so genuinely brave in your heart, and you have to want it so bad that you they lit the candle. You were sitting on it, and you went.
When I got to confess, when that rocket went off, I thought, "Oh my God, the goddamn thing blew up underneath me!"
Yes.
And this thing went through my mind. I've lived a good life.
That's right, man. God, it just, you got to do it. And you went 65 miles. You went past the Kármán line. You looked out that window and you felt it, man. You did it. Yeah. You did it.
Well, you know, the thing about, you know, I had in my flight test stuff, I'd been up to about 80,000. And you get you sit in the atmosphere, of course, and you get a glimmer of Earth curvature, but it's nothing like going into space and crossing that. I assumed that there was a graded area between the atmosphere and space. I mean, I don't think anybody would assume that.
Sure.
You would go through different you know, but it's a sharp, exact line, and it's very, very bright. And from the capsule, it looked like it could be about 2 inches, but in real life, it would probably be about 40 feet or something like that as you're looking out. But the dividing line between the atmosphere and dark space is an what happened was, I'm in the capsule, and there's a 10-foot-tall window that you're sitting next to, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this curtain, and I said, well, they didn't, when we were training, there was no black curtain coming down. And it started at the top.
Right.
I said, man, they've added some dramatics to this.
Yeah.
And this curtain, and we were entering space, and this curtain came down, and it was absolutely astounding until we got all the way down, and pretty soon we're up in black space. And I wasn't looking up for the final stars. I was looking down at the earth to look at that ball down there that we're walking around on and that we treat so bad.
Right.
And one of the spiritual aspects of this thing is looking down at that earth. There's no dividing lines between states and countries. And you just wonder why the hell can't these people get along with each other? And if they don't do something to save this place, because it's so magnificent,
yes,
and that's the spiritual aspect of this thing that just kind of blows your mind a little bit, really.
Yeah.
If you got anything inside your head between your ears, and that's why my manifestation of a better world is everybody having a trip to space.
Yes. No, that's it.
Go ahead. No,
it's bigger than us, right? And let me tell you, I'm so happy for you personally, but and you've always said it, it's much bigger than you, this idea of you making it to space.
Right.
Perseverance, hope, accomplishment.
Right.
And then you're the perfect person, man, to tell them. And scientists can tell them, the news can tell them, hey, man, we're fragile. We're a world. We are fragile. We're rare. There's nothing we can find like us out there. You better take care of it, and you better realize we're all stuck on the same spinning mud ball, because you better figure it out. You better stop shooting each other, man. This is all we got.
Like the next one that has any building blocks to build anything like life and humanity is 300 light years away.
Yeah.
So we're out here by ourselves.
Yeah, yes. And I can't tell you, when I saw the news that you went up on Blue Origin and being, of course, the Kansas City connection, and heck, your statue's outside the Folly Theater here in Kansas City.
Yeah, wow.
Concerto. You built the statue Concerto.
Yeah.
And I just love it. And your father, and it's worth mentioning, your connection is so good. Second base, Kansas City Monarchs.
Yeah. Well, he started out as second, but he ended up in right field mainly because of his height. People don't realize that the infielders are better infielders or taller guys, because they can catch those line drives.
Right.
And he started out in the infield though, but he was moved to the outfield later in his career. And I was all tied up with that. I just sat on Satchel Paige's lap. When I was five years old, I stood on Satchel Paige's lap, and Dad got pissed off at me because Satchel was always giving me money.
That's great.
And so he caught us one day in the money exchange, and I got a whooping. And he said, "Don't you dare take any money, man! How will you embarrassing me?" And so Satchel and I came up with a secret way that he'd walk past me and slide it in the back of his hand, and just lay it on me. I got my money anyway. I was a bad boy for the Monarchs when Jackie Robinson got picked out in 1947. Yeah, I was hanging out there in 1947, and I was also in charge of all of the passes for Kansas City, Kansas. But it was Dad's job, because we lived in Kansas City, Kansas. To pass out the all the announcement to the businesses,
right?
And then they'd get a free pass. And of course, he paid me $5 to do it for him. So part of my job was going to all these black businesses. And that's how I got. That's how I got to know every black business in Kansas City, Kansas.
Oh, that's so good. Well, we were lucky enough to meet Buck O'Neill and spend time with him years ago when I got in the business. And Buck would come in the studio and he'd tell us stories about, he always called Satchel Nancy. And So good, man.
Yeah. Well, he was one of my biggest supporters in Kansas City. He was a hugger. And this guy was the neatest dude you could ever run into, and he supported me. But I mean, by now when I'd go home to visit from the Air Force and everything, and I'd go over there and we'd have a talk and everything, and he'd given a lot of speeches, and when he was in the area, look, I was in California, I was stationed in California, and he gave a speech, and naturally I was the hero because I knew him.
Yeah.
He was a guest speaker at this event and everything. So it was great days in Kansas City.
Great days still happening for you, Ed. If you're just joining the show, Ed Dwight, astronaut. Mm-hmm. Now, and we were having a talk about that. The designation astronaut, because of your former test pilot, your U.S. Air Force, mm-hmm. you were part of the space program, and now you have broken mm-hmm. past the Kármán line. You are officially designated an astronaut, are you not?
Well, yeah, what's so funny about that was surgically attached to it. In 1960, that astronaut thing was surgically attached to my name.
Right.
And no matter where I went, what I did, and I admit it broke a whole bunch of business barriers because businessmen couldn't give me enough money to invest in all my business.
So, right, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and it was this astronaut thing, and it was good and bad because like when I came to Denver, all the black folks in there, that guy thinks he's so hot, he's just that the other, who the hell does he think he is? And I had no problem with my mouth. I didn't say a word to anybody. and it all changed later when they found out that I was just a regular guy and I didn't run around wearing astronaut stuff on my shoulders, I'm special because I'm an astronaut, or would-be astronaut, it's been one hell of an experience with that astronaut thing and without it, but I can officially say that. I can attach it to my name. I can take it from the back of my name and put it in the front of my name now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You and now two things. A, we need to get that sign up out of KCK that says Home of Astronaut Ed Dwight, childhood home of astronaut Ed Dwight. You see him up and down highways. We need to work on that. And we need to work on getting you into orbit. We need to get you into orbit.
That's something I really, really would like to do. You can't voice things, when your sponsors, like Jeff Bezos, because he paid for my trip.
Yes, of course.
That platform doesn't orbit. It just goes up and down, right?
Right.
And so if I run around talking about other platforms that orbit, I'm a loser.
Listen, I understand. Well, Ed, I got to tell you, I was so proud for you and happy and genuinely like, man, there's still, it's just such a great story of perseverance and hope and achievement and where you came and what you endured, and then you finally got there. And this is not the end of the story. This is just another great chapter in Ed Dwight's story. And I love you, man. I'm just so proud you're from Kansas City.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate all of it. This is really, really good, even though it's early in the morning.
I'll tell you, Ed, much like legend Buck Neal and many other people I've met along the way, man, you wear your legend well.
Well, thank you. That I appreciate. That comes from my mom. She taught me all that kind of stuff. I was the, I had four sisters. I did have a brother that died when he was 18 months. But mom looked at me, I was so tiny, I was so small, that she said, oh my God, what the hell are we going to do with this guy? and she said, I got to develop that thing between his ears.
Yep.
In order for him to survive this stuff, you know, because she lost all hope, but everything that I'm about came from that woman. I mean, you see, she taught me more. We used to go to Fairfax Airport, and she'd take a flashlight, and it would get dark, and she would tell me all about space, how many planets there were, and not even thinking about space travel or anything of the sort. The Milky Way, orbital mechanics.
Wow!
How the moon went around the sun, and how how the moon went around us, and we went around the sun. And she would explain, I'm going, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it. Once you understand it and you become interested in it, it becomes. It's an obsession with people. Like for me, I followed it with no hope of ever being an astronaut, but with the idea that I love the accomplishment, the danger, the bravery, the breakthrough, everything that it encapsulates is the last great frontier. The last heroes in this world, I think, are astronauts.
Right. Well, this thing started by my going to Fairfax Airport every day, you know, because I lived in the North End out there. I lived with the last little farmlet out there near the airport. And I would go there every day. And that's what got me into flying. And I became the mascot out there for the hunters that were coming back from Colorado and Wyoming. There was no war at the time. And I'd clean their airplanes, and they'd give me a quarter or a nickel or a dime, whatever they had in their pocket. And so I became the mascot, and I got my first flight out there when I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
I just said, these are all white guys. And one of the things that worried me, I said, I'll never fly. I really would like to fly, but I will never fly. Because as I was cleaning the airplanes up, the whole bottom of these airplanes had beer bottles. It's crazy. and I said, God damn, we got to drink beer to fly. and you got to drink a lot of it. Oh, man. I've been flying for me.
That's good, man. I'll tell you, you are welcome here any day you feel like getting up early. Yeah. And I hope you make it back to Kansas City. And if you do, man,
well,
I'd love.
It's going to be soon. There are things in the works, okay? I got to come down there to get the key to the city. And Missouri's got a bunch of stuff going on also. The governor's planning something in Kansas City, Missouri. I got to go to Topeka because they've done some stuff up there, so when I get down there, I got to run up to Topeka and do a little talk and all that kind of stuff. So I'll be down there shortly, okay?
Sir, if you have time and you're inclined, you're welcome in this studio anytime, any day. It's wide open. It's all yours.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Are we done?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You're a great Andy. Thank you.
Okay.
Love you.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.